Hello there, and welcome to What You May Have Mythed, where this week we are going to explore a mythical beast that I think most people around the world will have seen an image of at some point in their lives. Although nowadays they are usually covered in sparkling glitter and seen frolicking around on My Little Pony, they weren't always imagined like this. Today, we are going to have a look at unicorns. Yes, unicorns. They are a curious beast that has the appearance of a horse with the addition of a long horn protruding from their head. Images of these creatures can be found from all around the world on tapestries, statues, as gargoyles, and the Scots even chose the unicorn as their national animal. Often today, the unicorn is depicted as slight and delicate, yet powerful and wise. But the origin of this creature is a lot more obscure and, dare I say it, slightly perverted. The first mention of a beast that resembles what we now call a unicorn does not quite fit the pure, white, graceful image one would imagine. In 298 BCE, the Greek physician Ctesias described a wild, donkey-like creature with a pale white body, a red head, and midnight blue eyes. From its head there came a horn that was white at the base, black in the middle, and bright red at the tip. If any of you out there are artists and fancy a challenge, you could always try putting this obscure creature down onto paper. Let me know if you do, I'd love to see them. Over 300 years later, Pliny the Elder, a Roman philosopher, commander, author and naturalist, wrote about the unicorn, or a monochoros, as he called it, which means single horn, saying, and I quote, "The fiercest animal is the unicorn, which in the rest of the body resembles a horse, but in the head a stag, in the feet an elephant, and in the tail a boar, and has a deep bellow and a single black horn 3 feet long projecting from the middle of the forehead. They say that it is impossible to capture this animal alive." Although this differs quite a bit from Ctesias's account, there have been suggestions that both Ctesias and Pliny were writing about the same creature. Not an actual unicorn, but rather the Indian rhinoceros. This claim is aided by none other than Marco Polo, that famous Venetian explorer, who added to Pliny's description by saying that they spend their time by preference wallowing in mud and slime. Yep, sounds like a rhino to me. Every account of unicorns, however, is consistent in one thing. They are very, very difficult to capture. There is a rather entertaining account from a 6th century writer who stated that the power of the unicorn was in its horn, and if the beast was ever threatened, then it would gladly launch itself from any height and land unharmed on the tip of its horn. One wonders how the unicorn managed to get itself out of the ground it fired itself into. In the 7th century CE, Isidore of Seville also wrote that the unicorn was difficult to catch and indeed very strong, and would often fight with elephants, killing them with their horns. He was also the chap that helped to popularise the idea of purity that would surround legends of the unicorn for the next few hundred years. And this is also the slightly perverted bit. He wrote, "The unicorn is too strong to be caught by hunters except by a trick. If a virgin girl is placed in front of a unicorn and she bears her breast to it, all of its fierceness will cease and it will lay its head on her bosom, and thus, quieted, is easily caught." In some later versions by others, the unicorn died in the virgin's arms, but not before suckling at her breast. Yeah, that legend was definitely written by a man. The belief that the horn of a unicorn held healing power quickly permeated through European society during the medieval period, and soon horns were being sold for outrageous sums of money. Some sources say that rich families would have their most precious cups made from unicorn horns, as they believed that those who drank water from a unicorn horn would never die. In reality, these were horns taken from rhinos and indeed narwhals, and they really did not let you live forever. In some places, people believed that the unicorn could cleanse polluted water, and that if you made an ointment from a unicorn's liver, then you could cure leprosy. But of course, you have to catch the unicorn first. They were immortalized in artworks such as the unicorn tapestries that are now in the Met and Portrait of a Lady with a Unicorn by Raphael. The painter, not the turtle. The throne chair of Denmark is, according to legend, made of unicorn horn, and as I said at the beginning, the unicorn was used so much on Scottish heraldry, it is the official national animal of Scotland. But during the 18th century, when more of the world was being explored, the chances of finding a real living unicorn became less and less. The unicorn tapestries reinvigorated an interest in the creatures, but not belief in their existence. They were added to the list of legendary beasts alongside the Minotaur, Yeti, Hydra, and Griffins. I think it is thanks to the unicorn tapestries that we now perceive unicorns as slender white horses with long white horns, and thanks to folktales that they are seen as the symbol of purity. I wonder if the toy companies know about the original descriptions of their sleek, white, angelic creatures they sell, and realise that they should be making mud-wallowing, colourful, and, in my opinion, much more adorable, Indian rhinoceroses instead. Probably not. Well, there you go. An episode on unicorns. Hopefully you found it interesting, and I hope I haven't shattered anyone's desire of ever catching and having a pet unicorn. As you can see, it's quite difficult. But now for On This Day in History. And last Thursday, the 1st, we had the moment of Elizabeth I signing the death warrant of her cousin, Mary Queen of Scots. And exactly a week later, the 8th of February, 1587, Mary was beheaded at Fotheringay Castle in Northamptonshire. In 1926, the Disney Brothers cartoon studio became Walt Disney Studios. And on the 8th of February, 1989, an entire 5 centimetres of snow fell in the outskirts of Los Angeles. Why someone decided to document that particular fact, I have no idea, but apparently it was noteworthy. Clearly, the 8th of February was an interesting day for different reasons on opposite sides of the world. And that's your lot for this week. If you head over to www.talesfromthetrunk.co.uk, then you can find out more about Percy and her letters. And if there is a story that you would like to hear, then you can always email me on themythspodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach me on TikTok and Instagram. But for now, farewell, and you shall hear me next week for another episode of What You May Have Mythed. We'll be right back.